Welcome to the Mayo Clinic Cardiovascular Continuing Medical Education Podcast. Join us each week to discuss the most pressing topics in cardiology and gain valuable insights that can be directly applied to your practice.
Welcome back to the Mayo Clinic Cardiovascular Podcast Series, Interviews with the Experts. I'm your host, Sharon Hayes. I'm a non-invasive cardiologist and vice chair of faculty development and academic advancement for the Department of Cardiovascular Medicine here in Rochester, Minnesota. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Regis Fernandez. He is division chair of preventive cardiology and comprehensive cardiology at Mayo Clinic Cardiology in Arizona. He's also director of the lipid clinic and does lipid research. Today, our topic is how to integrate non-statin therapy in your practice, with updates from the latest 2022 LDL cholesterol lowering guidelines. Welcome, Regis.
Thank you, Sharon. Happy to be here.
Tell us a little bit, just maybe a high level overview about the new FDA approved non-statin drugs for lipid lowering.
Yeah, happy to do that. So one of the things that drove the development of this cholesterol guideline or expert consensus is that new drugs are coming up in the market. These drugs have been FDA approved. There has been some research backing up the use of these drugs, and this is developing quite fast. So it was important for the ACC, AHA to come up with a document that summarizes some of these new findings for providers.
You and I both see lots of patients who either they're not at goal, they have statin intolerance, they have lots of reasons why we've been looking for alternatives to statins, even though statins are still our mainstay. So who and when should we consider these alternatives or additions to statins?
Yeah, great. So let me just touch about first a little bit on some of these new drugs that people may not be familiar with, and they have some questions, and then we can get on to who and when we should be using these drugs. So I think most people here should be familiar with ezetimibe and PCSK9 inhibitors, which are non-statin drugs that have been supported in the previous guidelines. But new drugs are coming up. I think two that are worth mentioning is bempedoic acid and inclisiran. So I'm going to start with bempedoic acid. This is an oral drug. It's a very interesting drug. It was pretty much designed for patients with statin intolerance. It's actually administered as a prodrug, and it doesn't get activated until it gets to the liver. So Harry, it basically has no effect in the skeletal muscle whatsoever. So no statin myalgia, no myalgia from any type in there. It does lower the production of cholesterol in a similar way that statins do. It kind of blocks a little bit a higher level of that cascade of events. But again, it's activated in the liver. It does not affect skeletal muscles. It lowers LDL cholesterol by about 10-15%, so it's not very robust. It's like ezetimibe, but the company did market also the bempedoic acid in combination with ezetimibe together in one pill. So when you put them together, you can get 35% reduction in LDL or up to 40%, which is similar to a moderate intensity statin. So it's very attractive for people that cannot take statins and need that kind of reduction. Main side effects comparing to placebo in the clinical trials, one important one to know is gout. It looks like bempedoic acid can increase uric acid levels a little, so it's recommended to check uric acid levels and let patients know about it. But the incidence was really very small, but it was noteworthy and was statistically a little bit higher than placebo. Another very exciting drug is inclisiran. Inclisiran is a medication that decreases PCSK9, therefore have the same end effect as PCSK9 inhibitors by helping with the recycling of the LDL receptors and lowering LDL cholesterol. That's the mechanism of action. The interesting thing about it is that inclisiran is a small interfering RNA, which is a very smart way to do drugs nowadays. Other drugs are being developed in lipidology and other areas in medicine with the same technology, is basically blocking the information of the DNA into the RNA in building proteins. So it's a way to decrease the production of a protein that you don't want to make. In this case here, PCSK9 from the liver. Logistically, some interesting facts about inclisiran. One important is that can be given in a clinic only, clinic setting only. So it's not something that patients take home and inject themselves. It has to be given in a clinic because that's how the FDA approved the drug. So it's very important to know that. And the medication, the good thing about it, it's given every 6 months. So you get one first dose, a second dose in 3 months, and after that, every 6 months. So it's very appealing for patients. Can you imagine, Sharon, you have high cholesterol, you have familial hypercholesterolemia, and now you need to do is give yourself a shot every 6 months. So it's very good for compliance. It's very good for preventing people from missing dosages, et cetera. So very exciting field in lipidology. Those are the two main ones that people in this podcast will probably have questions about it.
Yeah, and what kind of percentage LDL lowering do we get with inclisiran?
That's a fantastic question. And you get about 50%. So okay. High-intensity statins, you get 60. Bisphosphonate inhibitors, you get around 60, the same. So this is a little bit less, 50, but clinically, you know, within that high-intensity statin reduction, 50% reduction. So it's really good for that.
Mm-hmm. And I'll just ask this because from a logistic, anybody who's not providing this in their clinic now, are there any hoops or challenges to providing this if you're a lipid clinic or maybe just a general cardiologist or internist?
I would say it comes down to the pre-approval process. So we have to follow the FDA indications for the medication. And it's similar to PCSK9, which came from the trials where they tested the drug. So patients with familial hypercholesterolemia, patients with clinical ASCVD, they don't get to be a goal, et cetera. But there are some challenges in getting, you know, pre-approval. So most of these drugs, just like PCSK9 inhibitors, they require pre-approval. And that takes time from providers. It takes time from your staff. So that is definitely a barrier to prescribing these medications because of the amount of time that it takes to get that approval. So here at Mayo Clinic Arizona, we're working on processes. We're fortunate to have pharmacists and pre-approval PA prioritization groups of people that work with that can help us out. But I can see how that will be a challenge for most providers outside.
You know, we've kind of alluded to these two medications might be appropriate for somebody with statin intolerance. How about somebody who's just not at goal? And so what are some of these thresholds that we might use and can they be used in combination with statins? And what experience do you or the guidance from the 2022 guidance?
Yeah, so that going back to when you asked before to whom and when should be considered, I would answer with a sentence that is very helpful to have in these PA processes and is actually in the guidelines, which says exactly that for patients that are not at goal after maximum tolerated dosages of statins, which could be zero. Some people don't tolerate any, right? So when you get to that level in an appropriate diet, so you have to document patients are on an appropriate diet, and they have tried ezetimibe, okay, and they have tried smaller tolerated doses of statins, because a lot of people with statin tolerance can tolerate smaller doses. If you have done all of that and your patient is still not at goal, that's the patient that we should be considering non-statin therapy. Another one, possibly more in the acute setting, which is something new, but something to think about, is patients that come in with an acute coronary syndrome, Sharon, and they are already on a high-intensity statin, right? They will require an additional 50% reduction independent of what the L is at the time. You know, in order to get a 50% reduction in addition to a high-intensity statin, ezetimibe alone may not cut that. So you may have to go into some of these other drugs that are used. So those are all new develops, new things that are coming up. But those will be the two most common reasons for who and when you should go to a non-statin therapy.
You talked about the 50%, but what what's the update on thought on LDL targets or thresholds for treatment, depending on the type of patient? You want to give us a review of that?
Historically, it has been a LDL of 70 or less for patients that have clinical ASCVD. So I'm going to try to focus on the patients we see most often in cardiology, so secondary prevention. So the new guidelines have a new threshold, and that's very important for that. So the new threshold is 55 milligrams per deciliter or less for patients that are considered this very high risk group. So we can talk about later what is the recommendations for patients with statin tolerance in general, but the guideline divided Similar to the previous guideline, they divided patients in group risks groups or different group risks with ASCVD and also in primary prevention. So for patients that are considered very high risk, so the key word here, Sharon, is very. Okay? So very high risk, because they also have a group that is not at very high risk. So for very high risk patients, the threshold is 55. Now, how do you identify the very high risk patient? Well, it's basically almost the majority of the patients that we deal in cardiology. I'll give an example. So very high risk requires, similar to the Duke criteria for endocarditis, a major and some minor criteria. So major criteria is any patient that had an MI in their life, any documentation of a myocardial infarction or a stroke or peripheral arterial disease, or someone that had an ACS history, especially within the last year or so. Anyone in that category fits one of those criteria is a major criteria. The minor criteria are very broad and is almost every patient you see in cardiology, Sharon, age over 65, patients that have diabetes, hypertension, smoking, all these traditional risk factors. So it's not very difficult to see that patients with clinical ASCVD, I would say the majority of them would fit into that very high risk group. So I think it's safe to say that if you have clinical ASCVD, unless someone is very stable, had bypass surgery 10 years ago, something like that, all of these other groups, we consider them very high risk and use a threshold of 55 or less for LDL cholesterol.
55 is the new 70.
That's correct.
So we're going to aim for a lower target on the vast majority of our patients. You know, statins are still the mainstay, and the vast majority of our patients do tolerate them, and a lot of them we can get to goal. But what are some of the new thoughts and tips and tricks on dealing with statin intolerant patients?
Fantastic. So first of all, let's not put down statins. Statins are still great. They have tremendous value. If we look at how much they cost and what you get from them, nothing beats them. They still have the best value in the market. But with the new statins, we have to think in terms of value too. We have medications that are not expensive, but they don't lower LDL much, like ezetimibe. And we have medications that are very expensive and lower LDL a lot. So when you put in that equation value, you see how they compare with statins. But unfortunately, some people don't tolerate. So how do we use that? How do we combine value? How do we combine cost? How do we combine effectiveness? And how do we combine evidence base? Because after all, we want to use recommendations that have evidence base in outcome. It's just not evidence based in, okay, lowers by 50%. Great, wonderful. But does it reduce the risk of heart attacks? We all want to think it does. The lower, the better for LDL in preventing events. But have they done placebo-controlled randomized clinical trials on this stuff, right? So when you combine all of that, I think the guideline did a good job. They have actually a diagram at the end. They kind of put it all together. And I think it pretty much kind of helps providers to decide where to go next. So I can tell you pretty much putting together, if we use, for instance, clinical ASCVD, let's try to focus on these patients because those are the ones that we see more often in cardiology. So if you have someone who's at a very high risk and you want to bring their LDL down, or someone that has, let's say, familial hypercholesterolemia and has that very high risk, so the first line therapy would be ezetimibe and or APCSK9 inhibitor as a first choice. If that doesn't work, then you can get into bempedoic acid and inclisiran as a third line. And the reason why has to do with outcome data that we don't have yet with inclisiran, for instance. By the way, right after, not after, but a few months after this was published at the end of last year, in March, they released some outcome data with bempedoic acid. So maybe now bempedoic acid can be put up a little. So you see how fast this field moves. But anyhow, the first line is ezetimibe or a PCSK9 inhibitor and or, it depends on how much reduction you want. And the reason for that is because of the outcome data that they had at the time the guideline was written, okay? For the patients that don't have this very high risk, you don't need to go to 55, 70, kind of the same thing. First line is ezetimibe and or a PCSK9 inhibitor, and then second line will be bempedoic acid and inclisiran. Now, for patients that don't have ASCVD, let's talk very quickly about those. Primary prevention. We have to talk a little bit of primary prevention because a lot of folks listen to this are in that area. So for primary prevention, if you have familial hypercholesterolemia or FH, you're in that FH range, LDL over 190, again, for non-statin, first line therapy, ezetimibe and or PCSK9 inhibitor. And then again, bempedoic acid and inclisiran, it kind of goes like that. If you have, let's say, diabetes, now things are a little bit different because the data is different. So for diabetes, the first line is ezetimibe. Second line, then we get into things like bile acid sequestrants that we don't use as much, but it can be used, bempedoic acid. There's no PCSK9 inhibitor and inclisiran in there because that population was never studied with these drugs as far as outcomes, right? It doesn't mean it cannot be used. It just means that it's more difficult to prescribe a PCSK9 inhibitor and inclisiran in the primary care setting. Same thing for patients. The majority of patients that you want to start a statin in primary care, they just have risk, but they cannot take statins or they're not at goal. First line of therapy, again, is ezetimibe, and then comes after that something else to lower cholesterol and eventually bempedoic acid. But the injectables are not in there because they are not under the FDA approval for primary care use. So it's difficult to get it approved for them. Perhaps exception for that could be perhaps patients that have an extremely high coronary calcium score, a lot of plaque burden. You might be lucky enough to get it approved for these patients, but it's just more difficult to approve.
I mean, there's always been is that really primary prevention, right? It does present additional barriers if they have not had a clinical event, as you say. Hopefully there will be more evidence available to us to be able to support treatment, because even though we don't have the data, I think extrapolating the data from what we know about statins and what we know about these drugs and other conditions, they are likely to be beneficial.
Absolutely. There is no doubt on that. Yes, correct.
This has been great because I think needing an update, and particularly for these drugs that some in the audience may have never prescribed, but are thinking about it and certainly have the patient population in their practice that they'd be thinking about them, this will be a very helpful jumpstart. And I think the takeaway is the knowledge about the new agents as well as the new targets, because we all get numbers stuck in our head. And I do think that 55 for that very high risk, and recognizing that most of our patients are in that category, particularly among cardiologists. This wraps up this week's episode of Interviews with the Experts. And I'd like to thank Dr. Fernandez for joining me today and discussing this important topic. We look forward to you joining us again next week for Interview with an Expert. Be well.
Thank you for joining us today. Feel free to share your thoughts and suggestions about the podcast by emailing cvselfstudy@mayo.edu. Be sure to subscribe to the Mayo Clinic Cardiovascular CME podcast on your favorite platform and tune in each week to explore today's most pressing cardiology topics with your colleagues at Mayo Clinic.
This has been a Mayo Clinic podcast.